89.3 WHFR.FM. This program may impose some cerebral responsibility on the listener.
If you're looking for a unique way to learn about the world, why not welcome an exchange student into your home? You and your family can discover new customs and cultures and forge a lifelong bond with a young person from another country. Since 1979, EF Foundation for Foreign Study has matched over 100,000 exchange students with caring host families across the U.S. To learn how you can bring the world into your home, visit effoundation.org or call 1-800-44-SHARE.
A public service message from EF Foundation.
With your host, Bam, on WHFR.
My name is Bam, and I invite you to join me for my newest show called The Mix with Bam, every Thursday from 9 to midnight. The three-hour mix is spun by guest DJs from around the world, featuring the very best in electronic music. It's all hosted by me, every single Thursday from 9 to midnight, right here on the only station making waves, WHFR. Are you looking for a real degree that's going to prepare you for the future? Then listen up. The Alternative Energy Technology degree is great for students looking to prepare themselves for a career in a new generation of green jobs. Students will learn about renewable energy and promoting and practicing of energy efficiency. If you're interested in more information about this degree or any of the other degrees here at HFCC, please call 1-800-585-HFCC or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time in our forum series. It is the fifth Tuesday of the month. It is time for Dearborn Heights News and Views. Welcome to Dearborn Heights News and Views, a talk show program which is part of the WHFR Forum series, presented on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. And this program is offered on the fifth Tuesday of any month. Your host is Ned Apigian. The forum talk programs are presented on WHFR-FM, Making Waves, from the Henry Ford Community College campus in Dearborn, Michigan. And now our host, newly elected Dearborn Heights councilperson, Ned Apigian, on today's program of Dearborn Heights News and Views.
Well, thank you, Jay. I appreciate that little recommendation that I'm the new councilman. But today we have our guest on our program today has been around a lot longer than me. Half the things they talk about, I don't know what they're talking about. But I guess I'll learn. But we have the treasurer today, and he is John J. Riley II, born in Detroit, a West Sider close to us here in Dearborn from the Warrendale District. John, welcome.
Welcome, Ned. Congratulations.
And I hope you enjoy this somewhat less of an hour, but I believe it's going to be very informative, if not for the listeners, at least me. And hopefully the Dearborn Heights listeners will appreciate it as well. John is a graduate of St. Alphonsus High School from Dearborn, Michigan in June of 1983. He is a Henry Ford Community College student and transferred his credits in 83 from the 86. And he's a Michigan State University graduate, bachelor's degree in accounting in December of 1988. same year my daughter's, if I remember right. Walsh College in Troy, Michigan, a Master of Science of Finance. Hopefully we'll learn the difference between finance and accounting. I always wanted to know that, John, tell me. In August of 1997, he's a certified public accountant in February 1992. His work experience is as follows. He was elected treasurer of the city of Dearborn Heights in January of 1994 to the present. A marvelous achievement. 16 years. He's responsible for revenue collections, including city and county tax collections, water utility payments. Well, we're going to get into each one of those to find out what they are and how it works. He manages the city's cash flow and investment operating cash. He's the administrator and member of the Board of Trustees for two defined benefit employee pension systems. Mark those down, John. We want to know about each one of them. And he's the city's delegate to the Central Wayne County Sanitation Authority. That's another question we got to ask you. What on earth is that? He is the staff, was the staff accountant for Pollock and Richard from November 92 to December 93, communicated with clients during compilations of financial statements, reviewed individual income tax returns prepared by professionals, paraprofessionals, researched a variety of federal and state tax issues. The tax associate with Coopers and Libran, Detroit, Michigan, January 1990 to November 1992, before he became a public servant, prepared many large consolidated corporate income tax returns. He's familiar with various state and local tax forms. Also wrote out confirmations, carried on substantive tests of transactions, and performed analytical procedures on audits. His involvement in the city is not limited to, but part of, he is past president of the Wayne County Treasurers Association, past president of the Dearborn Heights JCs, past co-president of the Gulfview Manor Civic Association, member of the Dearborn Heights Goodfellows, a Boy Scout, Eagle Scout. Lord have mercy. I always wanted to know that. I was an Air Scout for a while. John, now, I don't know whether it's up to me to begin. Let's ask you these issues that we're talking about. How would you like to begin this? You might have a statement about what treasurers do or think or concerned with in general before we ask you questions that you might want to.
Yeah, the main responsibility of the treasurer is make sure that the funds are all there and accounted for and that they're safekeeping. I mean, our number one pledge is the protection of the principal of our investments, and then we later have to be concerned about the cash flow for the city. Later follow up by possibly investing the money in earning some interest, which is very little nowadays. I think if everybody goes to the bank and tries to buy a CD, you'll see that the interest rates are extremely low, and we're not achieving the rates of return that we used to in years past. Mm-hmm. So it's a very high responsibility job.
Well, in your CV, you talk about a couple of things we could begin with, so only because it's just clear. You manage the city's cash flow and invest operating cash. How do you do that?
Yeah.
It's one thing to say that, but how does it actually manifest itself?
The main thing is, you structure all into calendars over the periods of time, when payroll will be, when major bond payments or debt payments would be paid, and just make sure that you don't have the funds invested to a point where they're not liquid to make those payments. I guess in the beginning it was harder than it is now. I think now it just kind of comes second nature. I've been there finishing up my 17th year in the Dearborn Heights Treasurer's Office, and it just kind of know when it's time to pay the employees and have everything available and ready to go. And, you know, that's one of our main concerns after the protection of the principal of the funds.
So even when it comes to payroll, you have to make sure that some investment is sold before you could do that? Or aren't there other funds you have? How about the rainy day fund, which should be 5 to 10% of the city's budget?
Right.
You
know, Plant Moran was just into City Council Chambers, Councilman Apigian, and
yes.
They gave us a presentation about the status of our rainy day fund, which too isn't the size that it once was.
I forgot what the number was.
Yeah.
Was it closer to 5%?
We're down. The available funds is actually less than 1%, the unrestricted funds. The restricted funds are higher than that. We got about $2 million in the restricted funds. But a lot
if
of
they're
the funds
restricted, meaning you can only invest them?
Meaning that in the restricted fund account is additional funds that are available. I think the majority of it was for sanitation, if I recall the auditor's comments made at the study session that you were in attendance. About $1.8 million of that, I think, was restricted for sanitation, which means that those funds have been collected for the purpose of sanitation. It can only be spent for sanitation.
Well, what you mean by restricted,
right.
I thought maybe not restricted in the sense you couldn't use them other than the interest they may draw.
Yeah.
What do you call that?
The interest that we...
I mean, if it's restricted in the sense its basic fund grows and never shrinks. So yours being restricted, you collected money for a certain purpose.
Right.
It's used for that.
And that can only be used for that purpose. And, you know, that's what restricts those particular funds. Because we have millages that are dedicated for certain purposes.
Well, that's another thing. So, how do you keep track of the millages and how the money is set up for that? Because there's several of them.
Right. I mean,
where do they go? They have to go in separate accounts so you're able to manage them.
Some people say, well, you know, the city of Dearborn Heights collects so much property taxes and this, but we're really the facilitator of collecting the taxes for many different institutions, including Henry Ford Community College. As you know, part of the Dearborn School District is in the city of Dearborn Heights. And so I collect for, actually, in Dearborn Heights, we have 6 school districts. And
insane. How did that happen?
That is unbelievable. When I tell other treasurers around the state of Michigan, we have 6 school districts. They're just in shock because, you know, some of them, if they have to deal with 2, they think they have a lot. So we're collecting for 6 different school districts. We collect for the county of Wayne.
Right.
We collect for the state of Michigan. We collect for, all these different entities. And our responsibility is to facilitate the collection and the distribution of those funds.
How was that done? If I had to do that, I would say I'd have a person in my office who only thinks about those things. But you don't have that many people in your office. So there's some way, how does it get directed to the right place?
Well,
does it do it automatically, or are you responsible?
We are responsible for that, but luckily, you know, the computers and the computer programs which we use, which is called the BSNA software out of, I think they're out of Bath, Michigan, outside of Lansing. They have a specially designed program for Michigan municipalities, and it's been designed so well that, you know, the majority of the Michigan communities have gone to it. And so they are very responsive to the community's needs and, you know, throughout the state of Michigan, not only Dearborn Heights. And so it helps us facilitate that. You know, I look back at some of the from the system when I first started 17 years ago compared to now, luckily the technology has helped us to keep track of, you know, the collection and the distribution of those funds, making sure that everybody gets their proper allocation. So
that's a really, you know, this is a question I'm sure most people are interested in. Lately, I'm sure Jay's going to have one for you too, and I hope he jumps in. You know, the county has been collecting its taxes early for the last, 5 or 6 years? The summer tax is getting bigger because the county needs more money, so they're collecting taxes early. Could you explain that a little bit to the people? And is that thing going on? What's the percentage that it's not right? By not right, I mean not correct, like the summer tax.
Well, I mean, you know,
it was
more or less
50?
Precipitated by the state of Michigan and the legislature kind of encouraging the counties to move those millages to the summer taxes. And then what I believe that the state did was reduce the amount of revenue sharings to the county in that particular period of the shift. And so it was basically another one of these accounting.
So they saved gimmicks. Money and exactly. Allowed them to collect money in advance. Jay, right. How do you like that?
Well, you know, personally, I don't pay my thank you, Ned, for recognizing I'm here. I don't want to intrude on your major list of questions, but as a taxpayer in Dearborn, it seems like, and I don't have it deducted by my mortgage company, so the taxes are a really big chunk that starts in at the end of the year. And then there is another payment in like February, which is a separate, it's a different one. So this big chunk, at the end of the year, which is like holiday times now, and when you're trying to save for other festivities, it isn't the best time. But, of course, I pay it all as one payment. I try to avoid the extra little monthly charges. Otherwise, it'd be split up, I think, into four months.
Well, actually, the
I
city
don't think of, you pay
city of Dearborn is actually one of those
extra.
Unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of those unique communities that allow the summer tax payment to be divided into payments.
The
city of Dearborn Heights does not operate in that manner. We have a summer tax bill that's due by the August 15th due date, then we issue a winter tax bill in December that's due by February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, as we all know, and what a kind thing that is.
Usually in my house, my wife gets a Christmas bonus or something, and it works out to be fine.
Actually, many residents that move into Dearborn Heights kind of assume that all Michigan communities allow this payment system, but
so Jay picked up on something
one of the differences in the communities. Unfortunately, our cash flow at year end, like our year end is June 30th of each year, and at that time our accounts are really low, extremely low, and at that point is when we need to start collecting the money to get the cash in so that we can make payroll and do all the necessary things that we need to do. The Dearborn community, while I'm not totally familiar with all of them, I believe that they have a little bit more reserves on hand that allows them to get through that period to allow that their residents receive the benefit of making installments.
Okay, let's take a minute.
You would allow probably a charge card to be used or not?
No. At this point, we don't use charge cards.
Okay. Well, again, in Dearborn, they do. Right. If you want to do it that way, but of course, Dearborn has many extra charges, not just the whatever company they're using for that. It actually really adds up, and the city itself, even though they break it up, there's an extra. It's not that much, maybe $10 at most for each of those five payments as a service fee for the installments.
And what is the fee that they charge if you wanted to use the credit card? It may be up to $50. A lot of the credit card companies charge a percentages to for you to accept their charge.
3%.
Now, we're not allowed to pass that on to the consumers. And like I said earlier, many of those funds that we collect don't necessarily belong to the city of Dearborn Heights, but belong to the schools or whoever. Mm-hmm. And so, they're not going to say, well, we only want 97% of our money because you gave 3% to the credit card company. Basically, the city would eat. So what some communities do is they use an outside service provider to accept those payments and then collect a convenience fee, which is quite significant.
Do you take a credit card for
only in our recreation area we do, Ned. We take for services that we believe that we can increase volume of users by accepting credit cards in our recreation area.
Okay.
And where those fees can then be increased, kind of like a normal commercial business can raise their prices 1-2% to accept that. Well, if you go to the gas station, you have credit card or you have the cash payment,
and they're different.
And so those type of businesses allow, but for taxes or water payments, we're not allowed to increase our fees to pay for those type of services.
Okay. Well, let's take a minute to have a little station identification. You are listening to Dearborn Heights News and Views on our forum talk show format here at WHFR making waves on the Dearborn Heights campus of the Henry Ford Community College. Our guest today is John J. Riley II, the treasurer of the city of Dearborn Heights, and he's giving us an education on what treasurers do and how some of your payments and bills are paid and made, and that's what we're doing here today. Hopefully, as you listen, you'll get better informed. That's what we're all about here. And John, let me thank you again for coming. One of the things that you had mentioned, we have two defined benefit employee pension systems. How do you juggle? Is there someone aside in the office where, how does that handle?
Right.
How do you handle these pension plans? Because I know the other day you got up at a council meeting where forewarning us of the dangers of our pension plans, where are being the payments are bigger than what the salaries were before they people retired.
Right.
So. Well, we don't need to get into that, but explain how these pension plans are funded. You
know, we have two different defined benefit plan. One of them is for the general government employees, which is basically all of the employees of the city except for the police and fire, and those are covered by the second plan, which is what Act 345 pension system. And the nice part of that particular plan
are
is
they different?
Yeah, the
are they different for the firemen and different for the police?
No, well, I mean, their benefits differ depending on their contract negotiations with the city.
But it's administered under the same program.
But it's administrative under the same state act, which is 345. And the convenient thing about the 345 system is that there's a dedicated millage to that, which the communities are allowed to levy or increase the levy to make the contributions to that particular system for to make the contributions to the retirement plan. And that was something that was voted back into the community back in our early days in the
1963, 1960s.
Right,
as I remember.
Right.
But as I understood it, these levies are not subject to the vote of the people.
Well, I mean, they were voted in by the people in the 60s.
I mean, how does it get increased? Automatically based on some...
Based on that state act that was voted in the 60s.
What are the percentages? Based on what? The cost of living? What?
The millage increase is based on what the need is for the pension system or the needed
funds. Mathematical need of the numbers?
Exactly. And that's why we have
based on the contracts that are signed.
That's right.
I see. But the people don't see that, don't know about it. That was the issue of this 345. Now, does every community have a 345?
No, they don't.
What's the percentages of the 82 counties and how many communities do we have?
I believe there's 100, maybe 100 of them in the state.
That's all?
And that's, you know, that's just a guess. I am a member of the Michigan Association of Public Employee Retirement Systems, which is called MAPERS, and we have a group that educates trustees of various pension systems on how to go forward in investing and administrating pension systems. And I just recall that, you know, that was one of the numbers that they had thrown out, I think, in the hundreds of 345 systems.
Well, if there are 82 counties in Michigan times at least, how many units of government could there be in Wayne County? You're talking about several thousand units of government of one shape, form, or another.
Right.
And only 100 are in 345, plus or minus?
Right.
Well, that's a small percentage, right? That's less than 5%, I would say. Anyway,
I was going to ask, if I may,
sure,
John, it's treasurer here. How do you do the health? Well, first of all, pension plans. I know for teachers statewide, since I just retired from Henry Ford Community College a couple of years ago, but I'm still here part time. Thank goodness for the pension plan. But I put in 40 years. Is it? And I know most teachers think about 30 years before they would be able to retire or take advantage of that. Is that similar to police and fire, or at least in Dearborn Heights? Anyway, do they need a minimum number of years to qualify for some benefits at least?
That's yes. I mean, the police and fire systems were basically designed with 25 years and age 55, you retire. Mm-hmm. I mean, those jobs are a little bit more demanding on individuals, to be lugging all of that equipment into a burning building or or taking chasing down
The most dangerous jobs in the country in terms of major categories.
So
anyway.
But you can't do them after a certain age. Right. You know, you get to be 60. I went to a fireman's training program. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that job for twice the money.
Well, it's very demanding, and obviously it's tremendous community service where they're there when we need them for, obviously.
And they're running around constantly, too. My impression was before they were deciding what was for lunch and dinner and who was going to cook.
Oh, they're pretty busy.
Pretty.
Especially in this holiday season. In fact,
they're
burning candles.
Paramedic.
Kitchen fires, number one response on of all the fire departments on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Thanksgiving Day is the busiest day for them in terms of kitchen fire. So,
so that takes care of our two benefit programs as to how the money gets to where to what.
So what about health insurance? When you're talking about pensions, you weren't talking about health insurance too. That's separate for police and fire employees.
That's it's very interesting. There's a new law that required the communities, because basically a lot of the communities were going along on the pay as you go system for health care. And now there was new provisions that required us to figure out what those liabilities were. And so these these contracts, and people have been retiring over all these years, we had to do an actuarial study to find out that we actually had about $120 million unfunded health care liability out there that nobody ever put a sticker to. And so now the community is addressing those issues by number one is we're going...
When you say unfunded, there was no way to fund it?
Well, I mean, in years past, the forefathers never put the funds aside during an individual's career to fund their health care during retirement.
So they decided to treat it like Social Security.
Exactly.
It isn't a real fund.
Right.
The people paying then pay it with the money that comes in. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so currently... We know what our liability is. We're working with various insurance companies to try to get the premiums down, which will lower the liability going forward. And also, we're in the midst of designing a trust fund so that we can start pre-funding this going into the future. Currently, we're working with our corporation counsel, Miyake. We're waiting for some final issues from him to get this trust off the ground, and at least in the councils. Unfortunately, at this time, our revenues are down from tax collections, state shared revenues are down, and is there extra funding to start putting away? Probably not at this time, but I think at least the communities like Dearborn Heights and other communities who haven't done the pre-funding at least are aware of what that liability are, and those decision makers need to think about these things when they're doing their negotiations.
Let me ask you about Andy Dillon, the former representative to the Michigan legislature from the Dearborn Heights area, who was term limited out and is the new treasurer. You're treasurer of Dearborn Heights. Right. He's the treasurer of the state of Michigan as newly appointed by the governor-elect
Snyder. He decided to support Snyder and got himself a nice job.
Well, of course, he was hoping to run for governor himself as a Democrat.
Yeah,
so
I would have.
He lost in the primary to Mr.
Right,
Panera,
yes,
right?
Yes. But I just got done talking to George Duraney, who is the rep to the Michigan legislature, newly elected from the Dearborn area. And he thought, because he's had a couple of orientation sessions in Lansing, is that you might expect Dillon to, since he has a closer ear to the governor now as one of his top officers as treasurer.
He's another guy like him. What the governor did is the same thing he used to do.
That the governor might be open to consideration of what formerly was Dillon's proposal in the legislature to redoing and combining the health insurance for public employees in the state of Michigan.
That's right.
Putting standard government, I call them office or bureaucratic employees.
Join them together.
Together with the teachers and the police and fire. And, of course, teachers' unions and police and fire unions have been against that because they feel they're going to lose benefits and coverage.
Of course.
But it's a cost-cutting time for everybody and so on. Do you expect, or what have you heard anything about that plan to recombine Coming Alive again in the new legislature? You don't have to mention names, but off the record, do you think that's a possibility now that Dylan is going to be the new treasurer?
I wouldn't be surprised if that resurfaced, but I have not heard any rumors of that yet.
Actually, you got more insight into it than based on
Obviously, Andy did put that out there, and I think that was one of the downfalls of his campaign. I think
many the UAW of the unions, didn't like it.
AFSCME and governmental employee unions didn't back him for that type
of thing. So they got Snyder instead, right?
Let me ask a more general question, although we should take a break in a minute just to play a couple of our
more,
PSAs.
Yeah, this is
a big question. I was going to ask in general about the who draws up the budget. How involved is your office, the treasurer's office, in let's say the budget for next year, and what monitoring the budget this year must be, you know, money going in and out. That's something you do. But budget preparation, you're a part of that.
Actually, not as much as you would think. The city has a comptroller who is the chief accountant who works under the mayor's office, and they assemble and prepare the budget and present it to council. And so it's the city's council's responsibility then to review and approve that budget.
Is that similar to Dearborn's, you think?
Dearborn has a finance director, and the finance director's his responsibility is the budget, but then underneath the finance director, he has, I think it's finance director, treasurer, and then he is then responsible or has a deputy treasurer that runs the treasurer functions.
Is that okay because it's a bigger operation?
Well, you know, back when I first was elected, was in 93, Dearborn had a treasurer that was elected, Mr. Knoop. I think he won maybe it was less than 50 votes over. I think it was one of Orville Hubbard's grandchildren, and then soon after elected into office, Mr. Knoop passed away, and then Dearborn found that to be the opportunity to remove from their charter the elected treasurer position. And so now they move those functions over under the finance director. So in Dearborn, they have a finance director that does both the kind of the accounting and the treasurer function. In our community, we feel that separation of duties between the two departments, between who's accounting for the money and who's in possession and care of the money. And at the end of the day, the money in the bank needs to reconcile with the accounting records of the comptroller's office and say that's the check and balance between those two departments. Back to the budget question. Our comptroller and the mayor assembles the budget and gives it to the council for their approval. And so this coming year is going to be very challenging. As we know, last year we operated at a $3,300,000 deficit, reducing our fund balance from its $5.6 million down to $2.3 million.
So obviously we cannot
operate like that for another year.
Now, I interviewed the mayor.
Let me just for clarity's sake, you're not involved in the budget preparation process?
Only for my particular department. But not for the city as a whole.
Okay.
And so, like I said, the accountant for the city, who is the chief accountant, is the comptroller, and they have a deputy comptroller, Mr. McCary, Vince McCary, Don Barrow. Those individuals assemble the budget under the mayor's direction, our chief officer for the city, and then they present that to the council. And that's the way our charter for the city of Dearborn Heights was drafted.
Okay, so you're off the hot seats.
A lot
of the time. I mean,
well, you know, in the previous administration, I was more involved in the administration of this city. Under the current administration, they are running things the way they want to run them, which is their prerogative. I mean, that's the way the charter is set up. So I have kind of retreated back to the treasurer's office and operate that.
Okay, and it's still an awful lot to do, but you. If they say they want to cut money from, you know, to save money from the funding of the pension plans or the health insurance for the employees, you make suggestions, obviously.
Well,
you'd probably be expected to contribute somehow.
Right. You know, in my position, I wear many hats. So if part of the budget process were to say that we are not going to make our contributions to the pension system, as a fiduciary to that pension system and a trustee to that particular board, I would not be hesitant to say we need to file a lawsuit against the city of Dearborn Heights, with which I am elected thing. But I wear two different hats in that case. Mm-hmm. I'm as a trustee on that pension board, I need to do what's best for those retirees and pension participants, even the current workforce, to say that those contributions need to be made for the system to pre-fund the obligations to those individuals into the future. And so you can see where these multiple hats come into play and have to be, you have to say, what am I looking at? Ned mentioned earlier when I was talking about the high pensions that came forward at a previous council meeting. At that time, I was wearing my citizen's hat. I, too, am a taxpayer for the city of Dearborn Heights, and when I hear of these large pensions that I think are overblown, I have the right as a citizen for the city of Dearborn Heights to step up and say, I think this is out of control because I am paying for this, and I look up and down my block and say, the mean income for a resident of the city of Dearborn Heights is about it's $50,000, the mean income, and yet we're paying a tax is to fund pensions over $100,000. I have a problem with that.
Well, I think we've reached a point where we can have a PSA, and we'll do another station identification after and give John a break. And let's have our first PSA. The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit-hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
Get paid while gaining experience related to your educational and career goal. Henry Ford Community College has a variety of programs that participate in cooperative education where the college and an employer join together to provide you, the student, with a method of learning that integrates work experience and classroom instruction. To find out more about co-op programs at HFCC, go to hfcc.edu/COOP or call 1-800-585-HFCC.
Well, our guest today, if you've been listening, is our very intense treasurer of the city of Dearborn Heights. Today's program, of course, is News and Views of Dearborn Heights. We've invited the treasurer of the city of Dearborn Heights, John J. Riley, and we're here at WHFR in Dearborn, making waves from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College. And this program is part of our Tuesday forum talk show format. And Dearborn Heights News and Views is on the fifth Tuesday of any month. And we're back to John, and hopefully I have a question about, you were talking about a reduction of state share revenues. I remembered when I interviewed the mayor, he mentioned that our budget's around $39 million, something like that. And he was anticipating a 13% reduction in revenue. If that's If you could kind of go through that with us as
what
our
reduction
problem
in revenue
is.
I mean, our two
There's
main
three categories, yeah. right? State, then we have property tax.
Right. So
this property tax thing will be a separate question.
Our two main revenues are number one would be the property tax revenue that comes into the community. Number two would be the state shared revenue. State shared revenues
as a percentage, where are they of the total? Roughly. Property tax is 50%, state shared is 20%.
Yeah, property tax may be a little bit more than that. You know?
Just roughly. So,
yeah.
the people
so let's know. Say the property tax revenue is in the $18 million, state shared revenue is in the $5 million range.
As a percentage.
So
what would it be as a percentage out of $39 million?
Yeah, I don't have the percentages calculated right out here, but
so it's a,
kind of so.
So it's less
so
than
about half from property taxes. Is that right?
You
said
right?
$18 million, right, yeah. And there's $39 million for the
right.
overall budget. So
and $5 million state revenue is 20%.
I assume that property assessments have declined similar
and
to Dearborn.
Yep.
Yeah, but it hasn't changed the taxes. That was the next question I wanted.
Well, the tax rate is the same, of course, but the revenue coming in is declining.
It is declining.
That's because of the foreclosures. My taxes haven't come down, in spite of the fact they say.
Well, you're special, Ned.
Yeah. No, I'm just wondering why.
There's multiple reasons. I mean, you could have.
People ask me, right. and I say, I don't know. I don't control them.
Really?
You know, the taxes are no longer calculated on the state equalized value, but they're calculated on the taxable value of a property. And over the years, if you've been in your home a long time, there could have become a gap between the state equalized value, which should be half of the market value of the particular property, and the taxable value, which has been a capped rate over the time that you've owned it, basically going up the state of inflation or the 5% at the max.
Right.
And so, you know, now that the values are coming down, that's bringing the SEV down. And until that intersects the taxable value on particular property, then do you start seeing cuts in your taxable
rate.
So
why is the taxes coming down then?
Because this is an old community, mostly. Yeah. The values in the homes are down because of the amount of inventory of foreclosures and those type of homes that are on the market. So it's bringing the overall value or a sales price of most of the other homes down in not just our community, but in communities throughout the state of Michigan or throughout the country.
Obviously, the actual selling price of the properties in the city, if you know, that's calculated into that state.
Well, that would definitely
value, so.
Change. They don't have to guess as to your value. They take half of that number, right?
Right, but the actual sales prices for the properties that were evaluated, let's say, higher, then that's going to cause the SEV to come down more. And Dearborn's estimating that property tax revenue reduction is going to be 10%. Between this year and next, mm-hmm. and we're looking at major, major deficits, and they've already cut, like pension funds in Dearborn was the way that they balanced the budget last year. You may be aware of this. They just reduced it to the minimum reserves needed, and even the treasurer of Dearborn, I forget his name right now.
Mr. O'Connor?
Yes, or, yeah. Mr. O'Connor. He said, can't do it again. Right. You know, we're down to the bare minimum what we need to be able to pay these funds out, you know, and you cut down to the minimum sort of not even a safety margin. He said that you can't do that again. So Mayor O'Reilly's had a task force of community leaders that he appointed working since this last January, and they're starting to introduce their suggestions. And the current council in Dearborn Heights says no more new taxes.
In Dearborn.
Yeah, in Dearborn. Right, yeah. So who knows where Ned and the rest of the council will go on that. Mm-hmm. I had a question come up later about an interesting proposal for taxation statewide. I'm sure it can't happen there, but I assume that's the feeling of people in Dearborn Heights, or at least the elected officials, no new taxes. Do you have any other place that you can cut, do you think? Again, you're not the finance director, the comptroller here, but can everybody tighten their belt a little bit?
One of the areas they're looking at is in the healthcare area. Obviously, as our revenues go down, that's an area of the budget where the premiums have been going up. And so, you know, the amount of copay that has been put into place for either drugs, generic or non-generic drugs, or you look at office visits on how much you'd have to pay for an office visit as opposed to going to the ER.
There's no statute for those payments. The city can make those adjustments.
They do that through negotiations. And so that, you know, those would be some of the items, Councilman Apigian, you'll see in the future going into these closed sessions when they talk about negotiations of, you know, these health care included in each union's contracts. And so, you know, we're bound by all these agreements. Hopefully the employees of the city of Dearborn Heights realize the severity of the situation, and the communities are not just crying wolf. This is a real serious issue. Revenues from both the state shared and the property taxes are coming down. Something has to give.
And let me say our usual qualification for all of our talk shows, and that is the opinions expressed in this show is not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. And yet they were nice enough to let us speak our opinions on these things. Obviously, you're in a position of having direct knowledge on some of these things too. On my talk show, which is on Fridays, the Journal, also from 1 to 2, Dearborn Mayor O'Reilly has said over the last year or two that he's almost praying because of the rise in cost to the city for healthcare premiums, just keeping the same coverage. The amount it's going up is unbelievable. He was hoping that there might be universal healthcare in the U.S. Of course, it means that somebody else would be paying the healthcare premiums, and we might
no,
be paying.
No, you pay him, but you pay him in the kind of way you don't know
right,
it.
That the city wouldn't be required to put this aside. Like Andy Dillon's proposal, there's more taxation somehow going to Lansing in order to pay for that plan, but at least the city would be off the hook for those extra costs. And of course, the idea is, and most healthcare experts have said this, even though we didn't get this at the federal level, is that the only way to control those costs is to get out of all of this private offering of healthcare plans where they can sort of divide and conquer you. I mean, that's how I see it. I mean, we're talking about Democrats and also some wary Republicans that see that the only way to control cost, as other countries have done, is that either the state, I mean, even Mitt Romney in Massachusetts, even though that plan is a little bit out of control, but the reason they did it was to keep the cost level. I mean, President Obama can say, okay, no new increases in salary for public employees, federal government employees, for the next 2 years. But he can't say that about healthcare costs because he's not in control of that. Nobody is, really. And whether or not the costs are justified is an interesting question, but it's out of control in the United States and in the state of Michigan. We're not getting the health care of other countries who've been able to control cost. And let's not even talk about socialism or capitalism or whatever here, but we are not getting the health care that these additional increases each year would seem to indicate. We should be getting better and better care or better coverage or higher quality drugs or something. It's just not happening this way. So we're hoping, obviously, to see our legislature and maybe the new governor. Again, a Republican might be able to do what a Democrat can't in terms of controlling costs, even though you say, well, I don't want to hurt business, laissez-faire. Well, laissez-faire hasn't worked too well with controlling these costs. And I know the only thing the city can consider, unfortunately, is reducing coverage.
Right.
Well,
I mean, that's
well,
all
have,
you can.
Or have the employees pay in more when they.
Right.
When
revenue,
they need,
more revenue more coming revenue, from the, yeah. the employees themselves.
And that's the way those premiums are set up, or that's the way the service providers are presenting it to saving money. Is, you know, you have to have your employees, you know, contribute more or, you know, pay when they want to go in for medical care.
But I guess Dillon's plan is if you do have the whole state, all the public employees, including police, fire, teachers in one, that you're spreading out the risk. So even, you know,
well, and imagine the quantity,
the quantity of purchase. So you might have a negotiating tool there to major health providers.
Sure.
Well, the major issue is wellness plans. If you wait till you get sick, it gets real expensive. If you come up with a system like this where everybody's in it and wellness is part of it, then you're going to save a lot of money.
One of the things that increased coverage for Henry Ford Community College teachers, professors here, is that we got an agreement that the Dearborn Public Schools didn't give to the other union, the K-12 union, that we would be allowed, they would give us the dollar amounts that they could, you know, that we negotiated for health insurance, and we could shop around. Now, we're a relatively small group, full-time teachers, only about 200 people here right. at Henry Ford Community College. Well, each year, we kept finding better coverage for the same or lower cost, because we got a team from the economics department really shopping around. I mean, they were doing hard negotiating all year long, and then we would be able to switch because
imagine if you had
the school board would allow
in
it.
That program.
Well, yeah, but you really need
I think
people.
You go back to the Andy Dillon program if you're talking about a couple million.
Right. Well, it's easier. I mean, each community, even, I don't know what groups in Dearborn Heights, is there anybody shopping around for healthcare coverage that intensely? You probably wouldn't have time, whereas, of course, these college professors, what do? They have a lot of free time. No, they don't. But I'm just saying is that, like economics profs, they know the numbers things, you know, and they're already kind of up to speed in reading, you know, contracts about insurance and that. And so I thought that was tremendous, although right now, you know, there's only so much you can do. There's really no way that you can – there's not much competition, it seems like, in the healthcare industry, I guess.
Well, you notice they never talk about doctors not being able to charge a certain amount.
No, no.
They keep talking about lawyers
or
not
the
being
drug
able
companies
to sue.
Can
but
keep
there's
going
never a discussion about that.
Well, back to the question, maybe John can answer. Is there – who is it your office or the finance director's office are you able to change health plans? Do you find a better one?
I mean, they have shopped around, and that comes out of our human resource department area. And actually, that particular human resource director is a part-time professor here at Henry Ford Community College. Well, and her husband, I think, is on the staff here, too.
They must be great then.
So, you know, and I think hopefully with that group and, you know, other groups that are looking at that there's a network amongst other communities.
Maybe Tony can get me a job here, too.
Right. So maybe they can, you know, they network amongst themselves and talk about where other communities are finding savings, and they go to that. And with the computer, I know in the treasurers we have a blog out there where we go to look at common issues amongst communities. Hopefully they're using that resource to kind of communicate with other communities on where to find savings in the healthcare area.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left in the hour. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views with your host, Ned Apigian. My name is Jay Koronik, station advisor here at the station. And our special guest today is John J. Riley II, Dearborn Heights treasurer. My question for both of you now in our remaining time, what's coming up over the next 3 months? This show is on the fifth Tuesday of the months that have them, so it's about 3 months away for our next show. But for both of you, end of the year, is that a busy time for the treasurer?
Well, actually, today's November 30th. We're mailing out our winter tax bills today. So they'll be delivered to the residents hopefully December 1st or soon thereafter. And, you know, many of the residents like to pay by the end of the year, the calendar year, so they can write and deduct them on their income taxes, those who itemize. The remainder of the individuals often wait then closer to the deadline, which is February 14th. What we start doing as the calendar year, next year, January comes along, us department heads of the city of Dearborn Heights start putting together our budgets. We submit them to our city comptroller, who will compile them. And then the comptroller, deputy comptroller, and mayor will go through the budgets and then try to propose a balanced budget to the city council. And then the council will receive the budget and go through it with each of the department heads, deciding on, you know, if it is balanced, you know, they can decide to make more cuts.
With
or
a special
put here,
meeting
there.
With every department head?
They do meet with every department head normally, we talk about, you know, what's new in the department over the last year, and you know, how there was either savings or where savings could be, or what the needs of the department head are. You know, many of our needs haven't, especially in the technology area, haven't been met over the last few years because of budget constraints. You know. And so, you know, those.
Okay, I mean, we can go back over that timeline for me, but is your fiscal year started January 1 or does it start July 1?
July 1.
So end of the year is still a matter of totaling up things, or is it just each month? So end of the year is not any more busy for you, December 30th,
31st?
For the treasurer's office, I'm talking about that, you know, it's the collection of the tax money.
Oh, okay,
okay, because our bills are going out December 1st, so a lot of people will pay by the end of this month. But, you know, as the city overall budget, you know, we're halfway through our budget year ending June 30th, 2011, so, you know, you have to continue to operate you know, under those budget constraints, but then start preparing the budget for the following year. Mm-hmm. And so that's...
And when is that due to first be introduced to council?
You know, I want to say April 1st.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, so and it may
be prior to
that, you know.
May, June.
And then usually by the end of May, the council has April and May, I believe, to go through the budget. And then at the in their May or early June meeting, they adopt the millage rates. Now, you know, unfortunately, the situation has it that, you know, we can't just go increase the tax rate, you know. So, you know, if we do have a revenue shortfall in property taxes, we just can't up the millage because we are at our
residents would always ask me, could you reduce my taxes?
But like you're at the top of your millage approval?
Yeah, the Headley, the Headley cap.
And my my understanding in Dearborn that they have a ways that they could go if they had to. If they wanted to, they could still go up a little more. Of course, again, the council has felt that they don't want to now, but that's the lame duck council. There's a new member coming on in January in Dearborn, but
Mr. Bazzi, Dave Bazzi,
yeah. But it's dependent.
They got that good system in Dearborn. Whoever was the runner up gets appointed. Right. That's how George Duraney got on in the first place.
But the situation in Dearborn Heights for your budget, it's dependent, as in Dearborn's, on that state shared revenue too, and so the new governor or I know Governor-elect Snyder was even going to be making some proposals, I think, yesterday or today, and I don't know what they are, that maybe the lame duck session of the legislature with the previously elected Democrats and Republicans, they might actually pass something that he wants. I'm not sure. But it, you know, his major proposals, I suspect, since he's going to have more Republicans in the House starting in January, we'll probably wait until after his State of the State address. But some of that might, if it goes into effect soon enough, affect your...
He's going to give you the Republican medicine like the other people just don't believe.
I wouldn't be so sure.
It's probably what's necessary, but he can do it.
Well, you can expect cuts, but, you know, since you seemingly asked my opinion here, Ned, some people are expecting him to be very moderate Republican, sort of like the Bill Milliken of the past, not a John Engler, that sort of a middle-of-the-road centrist, and yes, he'll make some tough decisions. Maybe he can reform or streamline some processes that will actually be needed.
He's a real businessman. Engler was a farmer. He never worked at Engler never had a job.
Some people say he didn't do much of a job when he was in office, but those are the Democrats. I'm sorry. He did do a lot of things that were unconscionable, I think, and you know, wanted to change welfare and said, well, just kick these people off after a year. And let's not worry about what they do with themselves. Let's just kick them off. We've got to start it sometime. So it seemed like he wasn't a compassionate Republican, as George Bush was talking about, which I never saw directly. Okay. A lot of opinions here, and we're not asking our guests to comment on that. So
I just drove by the mentals, the hospital on 7 Mile. It's all boarded up and closed.
Okay. So, Ned, what do you expect short term for the council responsibility? You said you've already been to a study session, also an official council meeting too? You've attended that already?
I've been to two. I think.
Okay. And you see, Ned took office, folks, if you're listening, as a new councilman because he was in an election to fill
a
vacancy. And so he didn't have to wait for January as David Bazzi in Dearborn does. So, so do you have agendas already besides the study session tonight of what's coming up? When do you get those for each meeting?
They have a policeman bring a packet of stuff to your house on Friday before. I thought the cop was following me. I did something wrong. It turned out he was the mailman. He was delivering me.
The weekly meetings are every Tuesday, you said?
Every Tuesday.
Tuesday evening?
Usually.
Uh-huh.
If it's a closed
session. At City Hall, yes.
The regular meetings, which are all open to the public, are on the second and fourth Tuesday at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the council often convenes at 7 o'clock beforehand, what they call a study session, to talk about issues more in depth that may be on that night's agenda, mm-hmm. so that they, rather than during the regular meeting, getting their questions answered ahead of time
mm-hmm.
and before the meeting.
Also, there's some issues that I didn't know about there where certain attorneys are at work based on lawsuits and things like that that mm-hmm. we're informed about that wouldn't be brought up at a public hearing. But it's...
That's always ongoing.
Yeah,
as they say in Hollywood, you're nobody unless somebody's suing you, or several people are suing you for, at any point in time. So if
or
you're,
payments or certain things.
Yeah, and of course, that's you know, the American right is to sue if you
and
don't feel you're getting justice.
People are allowed, I imagine it's the same in Dearborn, at the end of the meeting, they stand up and ask questions.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And, I wanted you to say something about the authority to delegate to the Central Wayne County.
That would have to be another show.
That's
a
whole show.
That'll
be a
whole show. Okay, a brief. We've shut down the city's the incinerator that is a waste energy facility, and now we're under contract to Waste Manager to take our trash to a landfill.
Right. And that was in conjunction with a couple other cities.
Yeah, so. And now the city owns that property that the incinerator used to sit on.
And hopefully it'll be developed.
And hopefully someday that would be good. Get it back on the tax roll. Yeah.
Well, I'm hopeful that those of us that were listening to the program today really appreciated John's loss of his lunch. I guess I got to take him to lunch now.
You should.
Yeah. To a special place.
And I see a cafe right out the window here.
Oh, that, yeah.
I don't think the city gives him a credit card job, but maybe.
I'm not sure. And anyway, Jay, what do you think about our little meeting? Did you ever interview the treasurer in Dearborn?
I have not, but he seems like a very brave person, like standing up last year. The mayor's he was not in favor at all of the mayor's budget direction, mainly because he saw that there's no money left to cut any further anywhere. And he had to make a strong statement, public statement. I don't know if the mayor appreciated it, that this can never happen again. That's how definite he was.
And Mr. O'Connor has approached Dearborn Heights on certain areas where we can work together on cost savings for both communities. And so that may be something you see coming up here in the future.
Okay, well, let's go.
Okay.
My closing music hopefully will entertain you and Jay's last remarks about our program.
Okay, and thank you again, John Riley II, for being with us on Dearborn Heights News and Views, and thank you, Ned, for being our host, and we wish you the best on your time in the Dearborn Heights City Council. Yes, and always important to follow that, folks, however you can in your local newspapers, and maybe even want to show up on to one of the Tuesday meetings. The 2nd and 4th do have study sessions, which may or may not be open to the public. Otherwise, they would start at 8 p.m. at City Council. So thank you for listening today to Dearborn Heights News and Views. It's an interview program as part of the WHFR Forum series of talk shows presented every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on WHFR 89.3 FM, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn, Michigan. And especially the Dearborn Heights News and Views is on the 5th Tuesday again of every month. Also available on our website if you go to WHFR.fm. And you click on the forum button and just see which dates there represent the 5th Tuesday. And that will be the Dearborn Heights News and Views Show. Thank you for being with us. This is WHFR Dearborn.